Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Boy, do I have a lot of stuff to pack into this show for you this morning. It's been the usual crazy week. And as is typical, I'm going to cover very little of all the shiny objects that the press seems to be chasing around mainstream media and the cable shows and all the rest of the stuff. I have some really interesting thoughts, shall we say, to share with you this morning, and I think it'll get the wheels turning. But basically, we're going to be covering very quickly, kind of the link between reparations and Bernie Sanders jumping up and down suddenly, saying that felons should have the right to vote, including, by the way, felons still in prison. There is a link. I'll explain it to you. We're going to be talking about illegal aliens storming the border, but not in a way that everybody else has been talking about it. You know about Trump's, I thought, rather brilliant offer to ship all the illegal aliens that the Border Patrol and ICE can't handle at the border off to sanctuary states and cities, and of course you saw the wails, the cries, the filibrations of all the Democrats worried that suddenly their so-called open arms policy might mean that there'll be illegal aliens living in their zip code. And there's been a bunch of things that have happened on that score, but I'm going to give you some behind-the-scenes information. You know, the Dems, the open border, the globalist crowd, funded by Soros, he's going to be part of what we're talking about this morning. They have... how do I say this nicely? Well, how about just, I'll just say they've lied through their teeth about whether or not there's a crisis at the border and whether or not there's national security issues involved. I'm going to give you some information that was obtained by me just in the last 24 or 48 hours from Judicial Watch. And the numbers of terrorists, the numbers of special interest aliens that have been crossing the border has spiked dramatically. Wait till you hear these stats. It will make you feel very unsafe. We're going to talk about, it's kind of funny. So this show, I'm rather proud to say, although I regret that the stuff I bring you is kind of prophecy, if you will. You know, I was probably the first or... among the first, there was only one or two other hosts, Sean Hannity being one of them, that said Trump was going to be elected. That was the day he came down the escalator. And I've given you the reasons for that in previous shows. I'm not going to pound them into the dirt here. I am the only, there was no other, that started bringing reparations to your attention 2 years ago. And if you want to hear the background of reparations and what reparations really is when it gets going in an unarmed population, i.e. the current attack on the Second Amendment, listen to my show, Reparations. Just type it in the search bar. The search bar on the website is really terrific. The producers have done a wonderful job. If you type reparations into the search bar at www.ontherightsideradio.com, that show will come up. I spent a good 45 minutes explaining the history of reparations, which really kind of germinated in Zimbabwe, Rhodesia, and is now being carried out rather tragically in South Africa. Reparations is a carrot, folks. It's both a carrot and a stick that the left wants to use. I'm going to explain that a little bit this morning. I was also the first to bring to your attention the Confucius Institutes. In fact, that was just 2 or 3 weeks ago. I've always talked about the fact that China is our real enemy. Yes, Russia is dangerous and Russia is definitely a foe. But, you know, Russia, other than its nuclear capabilities, you know, Russia is not on the same level as the United States. In fact, the Russian economy isn't on the same level as most of the European countries, and they're wobbly. China is the problem. And China will be the problem in the future. They already have a plan to take over the aerospace industries, technological advances, artificial intelligence, all the breakthrough areas, 5G, you know, the very rapid communication system, rapid internet that's being developed right now, by 2025. In other words, China's plan is to surpass and supplant the United States as the world's preeminent superpower by the year 2025. And all their scientists, all their engineers are being trained in the United States. 350,000 Chinese nationals, many of whom, by the way, spy for the Chinese government, at our higher, that's an oxymoron, our institutes of higher learning. That's 350,000 Americans, of course, American kids, who don't get into those slots. And since all these institutions get taxpayer funds, despite, you know, billion-dollar endowments that they're sitting on, in effect, the American taxpayer is subsidizing China kicking our butt potentially down the road. It's pathetic. And just last night, I mean like 5 or 6 hours ago, for the first time on television, I heard somebody talking about the Confucius Institutes, which the Red Chinese government has set up in concert with colleges, about 100 of them. They plan to open 200 more to spread their ideology, to propagandize their, you know, their friendly attitude toward the United States. I mean, it is it's based on the model of civilizational jihad by the radical Islamists, which has been quite successful. And that's something we're going to talk about this morning. And in fact, the major part of this show is going to be on that. We started last week. But let me just tell you that there's some dots that I'm going to give you, big dots. Obama, Valerie Jarrett, the Muslim Brotherhood, George Soros, and of course, our unholy alliance that we see really manifesting itself in Congress right now with alt-left bug-eyed babe from the Bronx, Ocasio-Cortez, and the really reprehensible Ilhan Omar from Minnesota, and the, I mean, you have to put on your earmuffs when she talks, and Tlaib from Michigan. And there's others. There's others. Last week I talked about how many, I talked about who's really behind all these people, which is the Justice Democrats. If you didn't listen to last week's show, I think you will find it an eye-opener. The group called the Justice Democrats, all these people are puppets of the Justice Democrats. The Justice Democrats are funded by Soros. And Soros, I must say, the more I delve into him, and I did a whole show giving you all his background, his history, his youth, the whole nine yards, just typed Soros in the search bar. You can listen to it. It was about, 5 or 6 weeks ago. This guy needs to be investigated. And I think a thorough investigation of George Soros, the 187 organizations he funds, which are dedicated to undermining the United States in every way, which shape and form, I would be very surprised if an enterprising U.S. attorney couldn't come up with all sorts of charges, including sedition, against Mr. Soros. And he, folks, he may be the number one behind-the-scenes enemy of the United States. The number one enemy of the United States is Barack Obama. He was at the time he was elected, and he has become even more dangerous over time. I've often said, and I'll say it again, Soros is the guy who spins the web. Obama is the spider at its center. I don't want to be too melodramatic here, but it is exactly what it is. And we're going to talk a little bit about the delightful meltdown of the left over the new attorney general saying in one of his hearings this week that, yes, the Obama administration spied on the Trump administration. Man, I'll tell you what, people were bouncing off the walls. Comey was on a was on some show, who cares which, and he was, he was visibly shaken. Oh, I don't think it's spying, and, I don't like to use that word. And Clapper said the same thing. These guys know it's coming down. And once again, I was amongst the first. Again, it was Sean Hannity, who was another one. I was amongst the first to tell you, when they started this investigation 2 years ago, that they will rue the day they started this nonsense. That in the end, it was going to turn completely around on the Democrats. And by the way, they're not Democrats. They are the moderate, quote-unquote, Democrats, are socialist Democrats. And the rest of the Democrats are Democratic communists or Democratic communist Islamists, i.e. Omar and Tlaib. It all ties in. All these little things that I just kind of shot at you, boom, 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 they all tie in. And by the end of this show this morning, you will better understand that. Because a good portion of this show is going to be, and this is the beginning of a little series I'm going to do. This is Barack Obama and Barack Obama's subordination of the interests of the United States and the Constitution to the promotion, and when I say promotion, I mean active promotion of Sharia law and Islamism, that is, radical Islam, civilizational jihad. I gave you a taste of that last week. I've done several shows in the past, in fact, some of them 3-4 years ago, about how Obama diffused the highest echelons of American government with radical Islamists and members of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a radical Islamist group that has in fact been denoted a terror group by virtually every other country other than the United States because Obama prevented it from happening. It may still happen. I hope it does. We shall see. In fact, the Muslim Brotherhood is so radical, is so Islamist, is so, prone to take whatever measures, including violence and genocide, to achieve its ends, that the Saudis, who themselves are avid followers of Sharia, have banned the Muslim Brotherhood from Saudi Arabia since 1927. Now, that should tell you a little bit of something. When ardent followers of Islam, the Saudis, ban another Islamist group, that should tell you just how bad that Islamist group, the Muslim Brotherhood, really is at its core and at its heart. And of course, I'm going to have for you this morning a story. I'm going to have a story for you. And then we're going to hit some other little points I didn't even bring up here in my little opening synopsis, my opening outline. And then we're going to get into some of these more juicy things, shall we say, with behind-the-scenes information for you. Not the glittering nonsense that you hear when you turn on the boob tube or you listen to, you know, the regular radio stations during the day, but all the stuff that's going on behind the scenes that impacts what you are seeing on the surface. Because that's what I do. Okay, let's start with our story. And you'll find that this story, by the way, because we're going to be covering things which are wrapped, they're mysteries that are wrapped in shrouds, that are clothed in enigmas when it comes to radical Islam, civilizational jihad, the funding by Soros and other dark money, the manipulations behind the scenes of the spider at the center of the web, Obama. I think this was a really apropos little historical tidbit that I picked out to talk to you about this morning. So on March 20th, just a few weeks ago, in 1841, there was an April edition of what was then a real hoity-toity, very successful literary magazine in Philadelphia. And it was the name of the magazine was Graham's Ladies and Gentlemen's Magazine. And on this day, back there in 18, not this day, but March 20th, 1841, there was kind of this genius editor that had come on board at the magazine just not long prior. And his name was Edgar Allan Poe. And he included one of his own stories in this issue of March 20th, 1841. And the story was called, quote, "The Murders in the Rue Morgue." History basically thinks of this story in the Graham's Ladies and Gentlemen's Magazine on March 20th, 1841, as the very first detective story in modern literature. It was actually more than that, though. Poe wrote a tale in which the reader kind of had to participate. You had to let your mind drift and wander, or you'd miss a clue essential to the story. And his format was so well received that others immediately began to copy it. I mean, it created quite a stir. And the main character in Poe's story was a character by the name of C. Auguste Dupin. C. Auguste Dupin. And this character in Poe's story, he's kind of eccentric, he's ingenious, he's an amateur detective, he has a loyal but inquisitive, but not quite so clever a friend, and anyway, to kind of jump forward, the duo puts together the mystery that was in this story that Poe published in this magazine in 1841 by deductive reasoning, finding and following clue after clue after clue, and finally putting together the whole whodunit, if you want to call it that. Now, does this kind of sound familiar? Yeah, you bet it does. Sherlock Holmes, Charlie Chan, the Maltese Falcon, Nancy Drew. It, even, you know, for those of you who watched it, Murder, She Wrote. They are the heirs of Edgar Allan Poe. And they are the heirs of the beginnings of Poe's writings, public writings, which was March 20th, 1841. I find that fascinating, because what we have going on in many different phases, shall we say, of international, American, geopolitics, intrigue. I mean, look at this attempted coup. Look at this incredible illegal plan that was hatched by the Obama administration and carried out through a rogue FBI, a corrupt DOJ, I'm not even sure what you call a State Department under Hillary Clinton. Just think about how complex this plan was. The creation of false evidence, the leaking of that false evidence to a willing accomplice press that then gave the evidence credence, the building on that completely false foundation of additional false evidence, additional leaks, and the covering of tracks of all the perpetrators. You know, the wild scramble to leave no breadcrumbs that could be followed. In some cases, overtly, like, you know, the destruction of 33,000, or the erasure of 33,000 emails, bleach bid on servers, smashing cell phones, removing SIM cards. That would be the Hillary Clinton folks. That's one huge mystery. I mean, it is a mystery. And then, of course, we have the mystery, which was part of that larger mystery, of the leak of the DNC emails and the arrest this week of Julian Assange, who's being extradited, probably after a long fight, to the United States. And I have often said that the murder of Seth Richards and the other poor DNC technical wizard that was murdered a few months after him at 3 in the morning, chalked up to a robbery by the Washington, D.C. police, except that all his money was there, his wallet wasn't taken, he had all his credit cards, they didn't even take his watch or his cell phone. Wow. Bad robbery. Julian Assange, when he was arrested, and yesterday, said for the first time that the information he got, he's always said it was not from Russia, it was not from a state actor. He posted, and I've done stories on this, because I have long suspected that Seth Richards was, and this other poor kid, was murdered by the Hillary Clinton DNC gang. And yesterday and the day before, the day of his arrest, Julian Assange, for the first time, has said that Seth Richards was the source of those emails which WikiLeaks published. So, you know, put on your Edgar Allan Poe hat, and I'm going to make another prediction for you. My prediction that all this was going to come full circle, was going to boomerang, that the toe they thought they were going to plant in Trump's butt was going to wind up in their own. I think you've just seen the beginnings of it, folks. I mean, we know about the dossier and the FISA courts and the lying to Congress and the leaking of classified information, admitted in the case of Comey, and all sorts of other things. Rosenstein going to wear the wiretap, the 25th Amendment. We know all that. I'm not going to recount it for you here. But you know, here's what we don't know, and what I think I'm gonna predict is going to start to come into this boomerang that's now going to envelop a number of these treasonous, nasty, despicable, un-American creeps that were involved in this. I think you're going to see murder. I think you're going to see extortion. I think you're going to see bribery. You're going to see some really, really nasty ancillary crimes to the crimes we already know were committed begin to appear as this onion of, you know, un-American, treasonous, I mean, I'm not even sure I know what words to use, as this whole incredibly complex scheme directed against us. Trump was the target, but it was directed against us, folks. They hate us. I mean, they tried to undo an election. They tried to steal our collective and our individual votes and throw them in the waste paper basket. That's how little respect they have for us. That's why they run around talk about reparations. Who are the reparations going to come from? I don't see any of these rich Democratic communists raising their hands to contribute to the fund. I don't see all the folks that are beating the drums for it indicating some source of money other than the pockets of other people. You know, there is nothing that is a coincidence out there. And that is one of the things you have to keep in mind when you are unraveling a mystery. A mystery wrapped in an enigma. So there's another kind of crime story for you that I think we're going to start seeing begin to be solved. And then we have the whole, not so much a mystery, it's kind of in your face, but the funding, the organization, the people really in charge of what's happening at the border right now, the formation of these caravans, the blockage because of campaign contributions and lobbying of any type of action by Congress to protect our border, protect our Constitution, and protect the citizens of the United States. And that, folks, goes back to Chicago. And NGOs, some of them religious, quote-unquote, NGOs, which are funded almost entirely by, that's right, George Soros. George Soros is funding what's happening at the border. In addition to George Soros funding many of the things which occurred in the, we'll call it Spygate, drama that's beginning to unfold. We already know that Soros was the most frequent visitor to the White House over Obama's 8-year unfortunate residency there. 88 times George Soros came to the White House to have his ring kissed by the spider at the center of the web. The webmaster and the spider. There is no coincidence that George Soros went to the White House 88 times, folks. There was a reason, and they didn't talk about golf and grandkids like supposedly Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton did on the tarmac in Arizona. They went to discuss money and plans and funding. Let me tell you that on this immigration thing, I think you've already heard Trump's rather, and the Democrats, you know, they fell right into it. I mean, they took the bait like a trout taking a worm. He threatened to take all these illegal aliens which are storming the borders, put them on buses, paid for by the federal government, and bring them up to Oakland and San Francisco and Los Angeles and New York, all the sanctuary cities, and, you know, because these sanctuary cities, I mean, that's what they're all about. According to those mayors and the Democrats, they're safer because of all the illegal aliens. And they're better, and they're cleaner. I mean, never mind the feces up and down sidewalks for miles and, you know, the tens of thousands of homeless in tents as you drive down the street. No problem. You know, you're not, what your eyes are seeing isn't really occurring. But, of course, the Democrats took the bait and screamed bloody murder, from Nancy Pelosi to the despicable mayor of Oakland who alerted 900 illegal aliens of an impending ICE raid, if you remember, about 9 months ago. And all these Democrats, including the mayor of Los Angeles and de Blasio in New York, you know, who's going to give illegal aliens free tuition and free medical care. They all said, oh, no, we don't want him. We don't want him. I mean, he's playing politics. And, well, you know, it seems to this old Hayseed's mind that even if Trump was playing politics, even if Trump's intention was just terrible in shipping all those illegal aliens to all these sanctuary states and cities, the end result is that these poor, downtrodden, desperate aliens are going to be home. They're going to be in a place that welcomes them, that takes care of them, that improves their lives. So, you know, if these folks wanted to follow the Saul Alinsky stuff, the means justifies the end. Hey, that ogre Trump, that nasty guy who's doing this for all the wrong reasons, we love it because in the end, we're helping all these people that he's transporting for all the wrong reasons. You kind of follow me on that? And of course, they say there is no security risk. Of course, they know it's just the opposite, which is why they don't want all the illegal aliens shipped to their cities, shipped to their boundaries. There's been a dramatic increase in what's called SIAs, special interest aliens. Those are aliens, illegal aliens, who have tried to or have come into the country from hotbeds of terror. Bangladesh, all the countries of the Middle East, Nigeria, Kenya, you name it, the Philippines. These are places that are hotbeds. Oh, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria. These are hotbeds of Islamic terror. These are hotbeds of Islamist thought. And although the Democratic communists want to tell us that what we're seeing with our own two eyes, we're not really seeing. And a million people crashing the border is not a problem. And et cetera, et cetera. Let me give you some information which just came out literally day before yesterday from Judicial Watch. And by the way, I have several Judicial Watch articles, or the producers have several Judicial Watch articles posted on the web. I believe one's under politics and one might be under immigration. Folks, these guys do a yeoman's job. Send them some dough. They're doing more than just about any outfit in the United States other than perhaps the Heritage Foundation to protect your freedom and protect your Constitution. Support them. They've dug up more information on all these mysteries. You know, they should have been stars in Edgar Allan Poe's story. Than the United States Congress and all the agencies and all the prosecutors have dug up on anything. Okay, so there was a study that came out, and the Judicial Watch had to sue to get the underlying papers, but they were successful, as they almost always are, in getting them. The SIAs that have tried to penetrate or have penetrated the border over the last year or two include outfits from China, the Middle East, other parts of Asia, Africa. And each and every one of these individuals pose a security risk to the United States and United States citizens. In Laredo, Texas alone, one small sector of the southern border, there has been an astounding 300% increase in immigrants from Bangladesh, which is a South Asian Islamic country, and it's well known, folks, as a recruiting ground for terrorist groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda Indian subcontinent, which is called AQIS. Do you remember the Mumbai attack? That's AQIS. The documents which underlie this congressional investigation, which, by the way, you know, Peter Schiff is so busy lying through his shifty little mouth and pretending that he's had collusion nonsense for the last 2 years, even now after the Mueller report is out and has been summarized, this is what Schiff should be working on. But like many other things which are critical to the country and to the citizens of the United States, there are things that are not being worked on because of this incredible, power-directed, unreasonable and unhinged continuing nonsense by the Democratic Communist Party. Anyway, what this investigation found is that virtually all of these SIAs, they are brought to and sometimes across the border by what's called transnational criminal organizations, or TCOs. And these TCOs exist to, number one, to facilitate travel along drug and migrant smuggling routes. I mean, that is what they do. Panamanian officials from Panama, they estimate that tens of thousands of SIAs have entered Panama since 2014 and have either transited to or have attempted to or are planning to transit to the United States. That's kind of scary. Officials from the country of Colombia communicated similar numbers to these congressional investigators. And what they said was that, quote, hundreds of SIAs have entered Colombia each year for the past few years, unquote. The SIAs, just these two countries that I'm using as an example, that are coming into them are from the Middle East, Asia, Africa, Syria, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Somalia, Bangladesh, India, Eritrea, I think I said that right, Eritrea, and a number of other hotbeds of Islamic terrorism. Let me quote this to you. Several disturbing cases of Islamic terrorists who made it to the United States via Mexico, among them are Mohammed al-Adairi, a Jordanian arrested last summer in New York for illegally smuggling SIAs from Yemen across the U.S.-Mexico border into Texas. Others, according to information included in the report, include Pakistani Sharafat Ali Khan. He's been convicted for smuggling fellow Pakistanis with terrorism ties into the United States. Somalian Abdullah Omar Fidse, F-I-D-S-E, a member of the Al-Shabaab terrorist group. Somalian Ahmed Mohammed Dakani. He's a member of the Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Barakat and Al-Ittihad al-Islami. Lebanese Mohammed Yusuf Karani. He's a fighter, a recruiter, a fundraiser for Hezbollah. In fact, Karani, you'll be interested to know, paid a Beirut consular office $3,000 bribe for a Mexican visa, and then paid $4,000 to be smuggled across the U.S.-Mexico border. Now, not only is this a threat to the United States and the borders of the United States, but what all these SIAs are doing prior to their assault on the American border is forming pods, pockets, and cells, rapidly growing, I might add, of Islamists in these South American countries. You know, it's kind of a civilizational jihad by the military arm of the Muslim Brotherhood, which we're going to be talking about here in just a moment. I quote, Hezbollah is growing at an alarming rate in Latin America. Designated as a foreign terrorist organization, FTO, by the State Department, Hezbollah has been operating in Latin America since the early 1990s when it worked with Iran to carry out the 1994 bombing of a Jewish community center in Argentina. But no, the southern border is not a security problem. Mm-mm, not at all, not even in the least. You know, it's kind of interesting when you see the antics of the left just over the last week, their anguish at Trump granting them their wish of getting more illegal aliens in their sanctuary cities. Ilhan Omar, who is a Muslim Brotherhood, I'll say this without equivocation, a Muslim Brotherhood plant and operative, put into power by the Justice Democrats and financed by Soros, and a radical anti-American Islamist, the Congress lady from Minnesota. Her anti-Semitic nonsense for years, her anti-Israel nonsense, her anti-American nonsense. I mean, it speaks for itself. Even though she tries to backtrack, cover her tracks, divert, you know, take all the Saul Alinsky steps when she's caught. This week, in addressing CAIR, C-A-I-R, which is the, shall we say, civilizational jihad arm of the Muslim Brotherhood, which I would bet you money she's a member of, she referred to 9/11, and you probably heard a little bit about this, as some people did something. Some people did something. Now, there's been a hue and a cry over this. And, of course, in true Unholy Alliance tradition. And, by the way, I did a whole show on it. Type in search bar, Unholy Alliance. I was one of the first in media to be talking about the linkage of arms between the alt-left and radical Islam. Listen to that show. She's quickly defended, not only by Tlaib, a fellow Muslim gal in Congress from Michigan, the gal who said we're going to impeach the MF-er, but also by the bug-eyed babe from the Bronx, who, all three of them, by the way, beating the drums of the fact that any attack on Omar for her anti-Semitic tweets, tropes, and statements for years, for her anti-American statements for years, and for her referring to 9/11 as some people did something, were all based on the fact that anybody criticizing her is Islamophobic, and of course, since she's not white, racist, and misogynistic because she's a woman, you know, the age-old trick of the left. Well, I don't know if Miss Omar listens to this show, I would highly doubt it. But if she does, let me just tell you that, dear, I don't care if you're black, brown, red, blue, yellow, or from Mars. I don't care if you're a man, a woman, a transgender, an LBGK2, whatever. You are un-American. You are a disgrace to your office. And it is appalling that the largesse of the United States and the United States taxpayer, which plucked you out of a refugee camp along with your family in Africa and brought you to the United States and fed you and clothed you, it is appalling how you actively work to undermine this country, the Constitution, and Americans. It is appalling. And that you were elected in a district which was purposely infused with Somali refugees by Barack Obama to create a voting bloc to elect someone just like you as part of the written white papers of the Muslim Brotherhood is downright scary. And I gotta tell you, you Jewish folks who voted for, and there were, I guess, quite a few, you are fools. You are just downright, upside-down fools. There's no other way to describe you. There are no kind words to say about your pulling the lever for this woman. It would have been like voting for Linda Sarsour. In fact, that might be an insult to Linda Sarsour. In other news, and we're going to come back to this civilizational jihad, because I have a bunch of stuff here to lay out for you that's going to just kind of blow your mind here this morning. One of the things I wanted to bring to your attention, I've meant to talk about it for the last 2 weeks. There's a very dangerous lawsuit which the Connecticut Supreme Court, you know, the land of Danang Dick, has allowed to go forward, despite the fact that it is absolutely contrary to federal law. And that is the suit by the family of kids who died at Sandy Hook against Remington Arms. I've talked about it in the past. You folks keep an eye on that. I'm here to tell you that there's one thing, in the end, that will stand between you and reparations. You and the destruction of your health care. You and the taking of your finances and security. You and the demolition of your house and its rebuilding in whatever form they want, because it's a Green New Deal. And one thing that will stand between you and the destruction of your Constitution, and that is your firearm. And as you're going to see when I do this final segment about Barack Obama, Eric Holder, Valerie Jarrett, and how they purposely orchestrated both the civilizational jihad which is occurring in the United States and the civilizational jihad which is far advanced in Europe. And yes, the civilizational jihad by force of arms in the Mideast. They full well know the power of an armed populace. Because in fact, as I'm going to tell you tonight, and as I have intimated to you in the past, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and a number of other terror groups were armed by Barack Obama. Just like the Mexican cartels were armed by Eric Holder in Fast and Furious. The left well understands the power of a human with a weapon, which is why they armed their secret allies in their secret quest, which ain't about the health, safety, and welfare of the American people. Keep your eyes on that Remington lawsuit. It is really a big deal. If that suit is not dismissed, or if, heaven forbid, the claims of the plaintiffs against Remington Arms were upheld, it is probably the end of weapons manufacturing in the United States. You know, maybe they have kind of figured out that they probably can't disarm us particularly if we stick together. But, you know, everything grows obsolete. And if there's nobody making guns or making ammunition, well, that renders many existing weapons useless or outdated. Keep your eyes on that legal action. There is, let's see. Oh, yeah. By the way, you know, it is the same alt-left group that talk about how benign China is and how we need China and how we need to work with China and heaven forbid we should levy tariffs on China and we can't be that tough on them in the South China Sea and yada, 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 yada. Within the past 2 weeks, you never know because the news is filtered coming out of China, a top Chinese general, and I'm paraphrasing his statements, said that, one, China should attack U.S. warships in the South China Sea because it is Chinese territory. This is where they, and I've reported on in the past to you, this is where they have literally taken underwater atolls, kept bringing in fill, created an island, and then claimed sovereignty 12 miles around the island. The South China Sea, of course, being rich in oil. Gee, just a coincidence. This top Chinese general said, number one, China should attack U.S. ships in the South China Sea. Number two, China should invade Taiwan. Invade Taiwan. And number three, China should demonstrate its nuclear might by taking out two U.S. aircraft carriers with their anti-ship cruise missiles. You know, it kind of reminds you of the Ayatollah saying death to America, does it not? In the meantime, we're distracted by Adam Schiff talking about collusion. Terrific. Just terrific. Barr. Barr caused a quiver in many left-wing knees. The more I watch this guy, the more I like him. And I got to be honest with you, I didn't know him too well. I mean, I knew of him, but I never really saw him in action or I didn't pay attention way back when, 30 years ago, when he was Attorney General for Bush. This is a tough hombre. He's smart. He's measured. All you have to do is watch his testimony in Congress. You know, whenever one of these morons got on his case, he was totally calm, cool, and collected. I mean, his eyes barely flickered. Great poker player. But he would come back with a retort, which was not nasty. It was measured. It was said in a soft voice. But it cut the throat. I mean, it cut the throat like a razor of whoever was giving him nonsense. And the cut was made like the brush of a feather. Very impressed with him. And I think he quite purposely chose the word spying, because that's exactly what it was. And there is what's happened here, besides this revelation, which I kind of suspected and which I reported to you, 2 years ago now, 2016. I think poor Seth Richards was murdered prior to the election in 2016. We have this arrest of Julian Assange, which I can almost guarantee you was engineered by the remainder of the deep state, hoping that they can kind of, you know, twist the thorns that they're going to stick under his fingernails so that he says something, one last desperate attempt to get Trump. And instead, that's going to backfire on him too, and it already did with Julian saying the source of the emails was Seth Richards, the poor kid who was murdered ostensibly to be robbed, except nothing was taken, at 3 o'clock in the morning in a park in Washington, D.C. on his way home from a bar. The interesting thing that's coming out in addition to that whole tangent of murder, and look, folks, you know, you might be rolling your eyes, we're getting a little far afield. I mean, we're starting to kind of push the edge of the envelope here, Reed. Calm down. Don't get too overwrought. I want you to think about what these people almost pulled off. I want you to think about the laws they broke, the Constitution they squished, the lives they put in danger with classified information hacked by foreign intelligence services on a server, the cover-up of those acts. I want you to think about all the incredibly nasty, incredibly horrible, incredibly anti-American actions that these people consciously took as part of a plan and conspiracy against the United States, against us, and against the president we elected. I want you to think about the fact that they are fully aware of the consequences of their actions, although they didn't think they'd ever have to face them because Hillary would get elected. And I want you to ask yourself, do you really think that any of these people, particularly Hillary Clinton, who has a long history of close friends who know too much dying, 53 of them at last count over the years, in some very strange ways. Do you think that a government which murdered a Supreme Court justice, that's right, you know, I don't have any advertisers that can be pulled. I did a whole show on the Scalia death. Antonin Scalia, you know, a great jurist, a great American, a patriot and a true constitutionalist, and the only man that could stand in the way of Barack Obama and what he wanted to accomplish in his last year of office. The only man. It didn't take Barry too long to nominate old Merrick Garland after Scalia died. Usually it takes some time to sort through many, many, many available candidates when there's an unfortunate and sudden and quote-unquote unexpected death by a member of the bench, particularly the Supreme Court. Go back and listen to my show. I did a two-hour special on that, and I put together all the dots for you. And at the end of that show, you can scratch your chin and you can figure out what you think happened to Scalia. But I digress. Do you really think that these people who have done all these things, who know the penalties they may pay if it ever sees the light of day, do you really think they're not capable of murder? Do you really think an administration who killed 500,000 people in Syria, quite intentionally, as I'm going to show you here in the next segment, an administration who allowed ISIS to run, armed ISIS, created ISIS. ISIS is the spawn of Barack Obama and Valerie Jarrett and the Muslim Brotherhood. That saw tens of thousands of people die in the Arab Springs, in Libya, Egypt, Tunisia. You really think these people would, you think they'd hesitate for one moment taking out one person who might know too much? Let me know what you think. I know what my conclusion is. One of the things which is coming out here, folks, is that Barack Obama directed this entire Spygate deal. And as such, he broke innumerable laws, including, just as a small one, number one, communicating back and forth with Hillary Clinton under contrived emails on her illegal server, which he said he didn't know about. Number two, lying about that. Number three, despite being warned by Devin Nunes in a rather comprehensive report in 2014 about steps the Russians would be taking to try and meddle in campaigns in the upcoming 2016 election, did nothing. Zero. You know, the facts are the facts. And I read to you a piece which came out, once again, in Judicial Watch FOIA lawsuit, which was a tweet between Struck Baby and his paramour, Lisa Page at the FBI. 1:50 p.m. Friday, September 2nd, 2016. Lisa Page texts her, quote, secret society conspirator boyfriend, special agent, Peter Strzok, quote, this is a quote, yes, because POTUS, gee, Barack Obama, President of the United States, POTUS wants to know everything we are doing, unquote. That, folks, is September 2nd, 2016, prior to the election. And then we have this very interesting slip by Mr. Clapper, or maybe it wasn't a slip. Maybe lying Mr. Jim Clapper, along with his cronies Brennan and Comey, he was on a show last week, and very few people picked up on it. This is a quote from James Clapper. Quote, if it weren't for President Obama, we might not have done the intelligence community assessment that we did that set off a whole sequence of events which are still unfolding today, notably Special Counsel Mueller's investigation. President Obama is responsible for that. Unquote. Wow. I think Clapper's getting nervous enough now that, like the rat, the lying, scummy rat that he is, he's throwing his boss, Barack Obama, under the bus. He's enlisting the Nuremberg defense. I was just a soldier that was doing what I was ordered. It was him. That guy up there in the White House, he dreamed this up and told me what to do. Anyway, folks, it's going to get really interesting. I think it's going to go way... I've been right so far. I think it's going to go way up the ladder of the Obama administration, number one. And number two, I think you're going to see this sordid tale unfortunately expand like the good mystery novels of old from Edgar Allan Poe and Arthur Conan Doyle and others, until it includes murder and other really nasty, nasty stuff. This is just getting started. Grab some popcorn, sit back, and see what happens. And by the way, a warning. As it gets closer and closer to the top of the previous administration, as it begins to uncover other sordid crimes above and beyond those that we know occurred, breach of the Espionage Act, breach of the Logan Act, even though that'll never be prosecuted, obstruction of justice, lying to Congress. I mean, I can go on and on and on. The first indictment of an Obama-era official just occurred this last week, amidst of all the other stuff, barely covered by the press, except a few outlets like Fox News. Obama's own counsel was indicted. His attorney was indicted. Because what's come out is Ukrainians did try and meddle in the election. Ukraine has admitted it. They're prosecuting people over there in Ukraine. And it was on behalf of Hillary and in concert with Podesta, at that time head of the DNC, Hillary, and Obama, including his personal attorney who just got indicted for it, for not registering as a foreign agent, the FARA Act. I've talked about it over the last 3 or 4 weeks, in his dealings with Ukraine on behalf of the Obama administration. There are no coincidences, folks. There are no coincidences. Now, in the last segment here, and I'm going to go through this quick, but it's mind-blowing. So you have Omar Tlaib doing their radical Islam thing in Congress, their anti-American thing. You have Obama, who talked to the freshman class of congressmen and women, I think it was a week and a half ago. And in that talk, he singled out Omar and Tlaib and said, I quote, I'm proud of you, unquote. That brings us to the first part of what's going to be a 4 or 5 part series, which will include George Soros's actual funding of this stuff. His spinning of the web so that his spider, Barry, can scurry across it. We are going to talk about in the coming weeks the history, the context of the Muslim Brotherhood's influence in American government, the doors opened by Barack Obama and Valerie Jarrett. We're going to look at the associations of 7 different Obama officials. You know, I've done a show on this in the past, and I named names. If you type in Muslim Brotherhood in the search bar, or if you type in Obama Muslim in the search bar, I'm pretty sure those shows will come up. This was, folks, this is 3-4 years ago before anybody was really talking about it. So we're going to talk about those 7 of many, those 7 key Obama officials that were actually members of the Muslim Brotherhood and in the White House and in other high positions in government where Obama put them. We're going to have a show where we trace the linkage between the Muslim Brotherhood and the state of Qatar. Qatar is a huge importer, exporter, dealer, broker in terror and radical Islam and civilizational jihad. If you remember, it was Qatar that Valerie Jarrett flew to secretly in, I believe, 2010 or whenever it was. Did a whole show on this, too. That started the Iran negotiations, which, of course, resulted in this horrible agreement where Iran got $150 billion of our money, plus over $1 billion cash dropped in, you know, on pallets in various denominations and world currencies on their runway by C-130s without Obama telling anybody. And basically allowed Iran to develop a bomb 10 years from then. That's only 7 years from now. That deal. Qatar is a nasty player. And it is a fulcrum on which many of this Muslim Brotherhood nonsense, if you will, teeters. And then we're going to talk about how Soros funds all this stuff, right? The spinner of the web. But this morning, I'm going to give you a general thumbline sketch just to hammer home how pro-Muslim, pro-radical Islam, pro-civilizational jihad, in addition to being an alt-lefty, the manifestation of the unholy alliance, Barack Obama, our buddy Barry, along with his henchman Valerie Jarrett, really was, and is, I might add, and is. We're going to look at his foreign policy. If you remember, do you remember when he refused to label the Islamic State Islamic? Do you remember he stood up at the National Prayer Breakfast and, to everybody's shock, started talking about the Crusades and how that had precipitated all this conflict with the Muslims? There's a really well-known, shall we say, philosopher, political commentator that has the complete backing of the Saudi Arabia government, who wrote in Al Jazeera. His name is Ahmed Al-Faraj. He wrote a piece that supported Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu when he made that speech before Congress. Faraj calls Obama, quote, one of the worst U.S. presidents, unquote. And in the article, he talks about the so-called democratic revolutions of the Arab Spring. Quote, since Obama is the godfather of the prefabricated revolutions in the Arab world, and since he is the ally of political Islam, the caring mother of all terrorist organizations, and since he is working to sign an agreement with Iran that will come at the expense of the U.S.'s longtime allies in the Gulf, I am very glad Netanyahu's firm stance and his decision to speak against the nuclear agreement at the American Congress despite the Obama administration's anger and fury. Let me translate that for you. Obama was the mouthpiece for and armed Iran. It's just that simple. Political Islam is another name in the Islamic world for the Muslim Brotherhood. And if you remember, there were revolutions, the Arab Spring, financed, by the way, surreptitiously by Soros and not so surreptitiously by Barry Obama in the United States, you and I, the taxpayer. There were revolutions in Egypt, Tunisia, Libya, and Syria. And he had all the support and aid of Hillary Clinton until she resigned in 2013. And then he had all the aid, and he still does, of John Kerry. John Kerry is still over in Iran saying, well, you know, Trump won't be president every day, just don't, or forever. Just, you know, stick with your guns, so to speak, no pun intended. The pertinent question, folks, is not whether Obama is secretly a Muslim, but rather if Obama is a secret Muslim brother. In other words, a living, breathing, fanatically dedicated member of the Muslim Brotherhood. That's the real question. Let's kind of delve into what Obama did there in the Mideast. There were 7 Obama administration officials that he put in place who basically were members of or had close associations with the Muslim Brotherhood and other organizations, CARE, ISNA, MSA, others. They were associated with the Georgetown University. They were associated with the Brookings Institute, both of which, by the way, are amongst the top recipients of funds from the state of Qatar, which is the home and kind of birthplace, the spawning place of the Muslim Brotherhood. There are no coincidences. All these dots tie in. One of those 7 senior officials, his name is Rashad Hussain, Hussain. Obama named him, of course, as a special envoy to the Organization of the Islamic Conference. This is in August 2008. He'd only been in office about 6 months. And at that time, Hussein, he co-authored, in other words, wrote with another, a piece for the Brookings Institute, which is a far left. I mean, they're like, look over your left shoulder, you might be able to see them. That's how far out they are. And it's called Reformulating the Battle of Ideas, Understanding the Role of Islam in Counterterrorism Policy. Basically, I'll boil it down. Quote, policymakers should reject the use of language that provides a religious legitimization of terrorism, such as Islamic terrorism and Islamic extremist. So you start seeing why Obama says the Islamic State, ISIS, is not Islamic. This is, and I'm probably pronouncing it, there's a thing in the Quran which is called tikad or tikaj, and I apologize if it wasn't 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. I could probably remember it. The bottom line is that says it's okay, in fact it's honorable, for a Muslim to lie to an infidel to advance the cause of Muhammad. I mean, it's really that simple. Lying is good so long as you can advance the cause. It is really rather Saul Alinsky-like. Anyway, there's another one of the 7, Dalia Mogahed. He was a member of Obama's Advisory Council of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships. Gag me. He helped write Obama's 2009 Cairo groveling apology speech. I'm sure you remember that. And the other members of the group that he was in, which was called the Leadership Group on U.S. Muslim Engagement, you'll love this, was former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, a gentleman by the name of Imam, he's an Imam, Faisal Abdul Rauf, R-A-U-F. You've heard about him, you know, with the World Trade Center mosque uproar. And Muslim Public Affairs Council's Ahmed Yunus. The report that was issued by this group basically called for, once again, engagement and cooperation with political Islam and the Muslim Brotherhood. Quote, the U.S. must consider when and how to talk with political movements that have substantial public support and have renounced violence but are outlawed or restricted by authoritarian governments allied to the U.S. The Muslim Brotherhood parties in Egypt and Jordan are arguably in this category. To kind of skip ahead, in 2009, June of 2009, Obama goes to Cairo, gives that famous or infamous, however you want to look at it, speech. And he said in it, the partnership between America and Islam must be based on what Islam is, not what it is not. And I consider part of my responsibility as President of the United States to fight against negative stereotypes of Islam wherever they appear, unquote. Do you begin to see some of the defenses that are raised? Do you begin to see why he's patting Omar and Tlaib on the head at his meeting with the congressional freshmen? Do you begin to see why Tlaib and Omar and their other Muslim allies and their alt-left allies raise that false shield of, hey, I'm a brown. Hey, I'm a brown progressive. Hey, I'm a brown progressive woman. Hey, I'm a brown progressive Muslim woman. I mean, they got all the shields up. Hey, Scotty, we're running low in dilithium crystals. This is really a big deal, folks. This is all part of a concerted plan that's well in motion. In fact, if Donald Trump hadn't been elected, it probably would have been done. Look, this is just a fraction of the evidence that absolutely irrefutably proves Obama worked hand-in-hand with the Muslim Brotherhood to transform the Middle East and to begin the transformation of America. Remember his words? Fundamentally transform the United States of America. Yeah, well, this is one of the ways. Let's take a look at Tunisia real quick. So the government of Ben Ali fell after there was a big wave of protests. Tunisia elected the Muslim Brotherhood with a plurality of just 37% of the vote, I might add. And later, Tunisia got rid of them, 2014, and went back to a secular government, much to Barry's chagrin. Libya. So Hillary Clinton, along with the French, take out Mohammed Gaddafi. And violence erupts, and suddenly there's a very unstable place in the Mideast, which somehow, some way, some form, becomes like the epicenter of the arms trade of the Mideast. The arming of the radical Islamists, including ISIS. That must have been just coincidence. Let's see. Hillary goes in, she's Obama's Secretary of State, she takes out Gaddafi, there's complete disintegration of Yemen society, and in the void comes Al-Qaeda, and somehow there's like all these arms and weapons that are coming into Yemen and getting dispersed out to all sorts of radical Islamist folks, including ISIS. Yeah, it's all coincidence, folks. It's all coincidence, right? Gaddafi, by the way, was taken out despite almost adamant insistence, including by General Flynn. Wow. Ah, now we begin to see where the enmity started to arise between Obama and Flynn, who at that time was the head of DIN, Defense Intelligence Agency. So despite all the military folks and the military intelligence folks telling them to leave Gaddafi in power, Clinton and Obama take him out. And the Muslim Brotherhood steps in, and it becomes really kind of an arms bazaar. It's like an arms superstore. And there's weapons that have been tracked that have ended up in the hands of jihadis as far south as North Africa, including in Boko Haram, Benghazi, This ties right in, folks. Let me kind of sum it up. Number one, on February 17th of the year of the Benghazi attack, the Martyrs Brigade, which was also known as Ansar al-Sharia, was hired to by Hillary Clinton, was hired to guard the compound of the American government. They were a jihadi militia, folks. They were, and they remain so. Second, the compound in Benghazi was crawling with CIA agents. In fact, Jake Tapper, whom none of us like, correctly reported that there were dozens of CIA personnel present the night of the attack, and that the Obama administration had gone to great lengths to obscure their activities. Third, only a few hours before the attack, Stevens met with the Turkish ambassador. Let's remember, folks, Turkey was kind of a transshipment point. It was a loading dock for weapons either from or to Libya that were shipped out of the country to jihadis like around the world. Fourth, the Muslim Brotherhood Morsi government of Egypt at that time was involved in the Benghazi attack. Let me repeat that. Was involved in the Benghazi attack. So Barack Obama basically boots Mubarak, who was probably the most stable ruler in the Mideast and who was a key to peace with Israel between the Arabs. Barack Obama jumps up and down and screams for him to step down. Unlike 2 years earlier, letting those poor Iranian revolutionaries die in the streets and not lifting a hand or a word, even though they pleaded to him for help. So he forces Mubarak out. Morsi from the Muslim Brotherhood then takes over in Egypt until, fortunately, he's thrown out. But while Morsi is there, is when Benghazi occurred. Let me quote. In fact, some of the terrorists were caught on video crying, "Don't shoot. Don't shoot, Dr. Morsi sent us." Another one of those coincidences, huh? By the way, it's always been my theory, and I don't know if it'll ever be proven or not, that Ambassador Stevens was supposed to die. He knew too much about the arming of radical Islam in the Mideast being carried on by the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton. God only knows what Hillary Clinton got out of it. I'm sure she got money. By the way, that viewpoint of mine is shared by a four-star admiral, an intelligence specialist, James Lyons. Just so you know, I'm not quite alone in that. Valerie Jarrett, we have now come to learn, she issued the order to the military to stand down during the Benghazi attack while there were still two of the eventual four victims alive on the roof of the annex. We've also found out that the phone call between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama at 10 p.m. as the attack was ongoing, 13 hours or whatever it was prior to the engagement ending, that what they talked about was not how to rescue the Americans in Benghazi, but what story they were going to concoct, which later, of course, became the video, and Susan Rice on the Sunday talk shows. That's what they spent their time talking about. Then Hillary went to bed, and Barry went to bed because he had a fundraising event, you know, the next day in Las Vegas, which kind of left Valerie Jarrett, an unelected person, we'll say, who happened to be born in Tehran, Iran, and is a Muslim, in charge. And she gave the military the order to stand down. No help to those poor guys on the roof of the annex in Benghazi. And then, of course, we come to, the whole investigation of Benghazi, other than by the Congressional Committee, which is where the Benghazi investigation is what uncovered Hillary Clinton's illegal server. So if nothing else, those people on the roof in Benghazi did not die completely in vain. It led to something much bigger, yet to be concluded, and people are going to go down for it, as they should. By the way, George Soros is also connected to Benghazi. The guy is everywhere. You know, the greasy tentacles of the spinner of the web is everywhere. The Obama-appointed lead investigator for that attack was a guy by the name, and you'll remember this now, I think, Ambassador Thomas Pickering. And everybody talked about how great he was and blah, 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 blah. Well, it just so happens Pickering, although the press didn't report on this, had ties to CARE, the front face of the Muslim Brotherhood. And Pickering, at the time of the investigation, listen to this now, at the time of the investigation, Pickering was the co-chairman of Soros' group called the International Crisis Group. He still, to this day, is a trustee. More of those coincidental dots, don't you think? In Egypt, so Mubarak is kicked out by Obama. Mohamed Morsi comes in. Morsi starts to implement Sharia law. By the way, Obama is sending him money, and you know he's pledged him $8 billion for certain things. He's sending him military hardware. I mean, he could do enough for Morsi, his Muslim Brotherhood buddy. But when Morsi was removed, when there were 65 million Egyptians in the street and he was gone, Obama immediately withheld all military aid to Egypt, saying that the process wasn't democratic. Okay. By the way, through 2013, oh, Hillary, baby, you didn't disappoint me. Oh, honey. The Clinton Foundation received between $1 and $5 million from Qatar. Ha! Huh. There's that old Qatar again, and there's that money to Hillary. Yum, 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 yum. And also, although this has not been widely reported, do you know who started, who was there on the ground fomenting the protests which led to the short-lived, thank goodness, reign of power of Mohamed Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt? Two names you'll recognize. A guy by the name of Bill Ayers and Bernardine Dorn. You know, the unrepentant terrorists from the 70s or 60s. And the folks in whose living room Barack Obama started his political career when he announced he was running for state senator in Illinois. You really can't make this up. I mean, don't you think Edgar Allan Poe and Arthur Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes and Dubin, Poe's character, they would have a field day with this, don't you think? I do. By the way, that advisor of Obama's, I talked about him before, Daya Mogahed, he's the one who was like the public face of calling the ouster of Morsi a coup and being critical of, you know, secular law coming back in Egypt after they were so close to getting Sharia implemented. And then, of course, you have Syria, Iraq, ISIS. And, you know, if you think that Barry Obama wanted Assad out because he was a nasty guy, think again. Let me tell you something about Bashar al-Assad. And listen, the guy is, gag me, terrible. However, he and his father, Hafez, H-A-F-E-Z, have been adamant enemies of and have opposed the Muslim Brotherhood since inception. Since inception. That, folks, is my surmise as to why Barry Obama, creating a whole bunch of lies as deep and as big and as nasty as the Benghazi was caused by the video lie. That is why Barack Obama wanted Assad out of there, because Assad was an impediment to taking over Syria by the Muslim Brotherhood. What Obama did in his quest to get Assad out and to establish Muslim Brotherhood governments throughout the Middle East, he basically let ISIS, he funded surreptitiously and then armed directly ISIS and then allowed them to flourish and didn't take them out when he was being warned by his own military long before they crossed the Syria border into Iraq. And in doing so, and this is because of his anti, you know, I've talked about all this in other shows. I don't have time, and I'm not going to repeat stuff for you guys. We got too much to cover. He basically allowed ISIS to become ISIS and armed them. I mean, basically, he spawned, he birthed, he nurtured, and he made sure ISIS grew into, let's face it, an apocalyptic force, total depravity, genocide, cultural annihilation, you know, sex slavery, I mean, evil, inhuman, and unbelievable cruelty. I mean, they set people on fire, beheaded people, tortured children. I can go on down the list. You know the stuff. I don't think you understand just how vicious and vile they were. And they are the product of Barry Obama. In the course of all that, Obama promised to do something about them but didn't. He and Valerie Jarrett themselves put restrictions on Air Force strikes so that even the Air Force was complaining about the fact that these were pinpricks. He made the decision to not destroy all that hardware, Humvees, tanks, you name it, that were clustered very nicely and could have been taken out by two American jets in about 1 minute, or cruise missiles, when ISIS overran Iraqi positions after they did cross the Syria-Iraqi border because we had done nothing. During that time, Obama did not once mention, not once, folks, mention the ongoing genocide, the irreplaceable loss of culture, tangible history. You know, ISIS, if it was not having to do with Muhammad, it was destroyed, much as the Taliban destroyed the ancient Hindu stuff in Afghanistan. Irreplaceable markers of civilization. The fact that he did nothing, I would submit to you, is proven by the fact that Donald Trump has, not completely, but 99%, 98%, wiped them off the face of the earth in 2 years. Obama did nothing in 5 years, other than allow their continued expansion and entrenchment. That's not an accident, folks. I've said this often. The failure to act is as much a decision as the decision to act. And then, of course, we have Afghanistan. Basically, he was in the process of surrendering Afghanistan to the Taliban. I mean, let's face it. He allowed Osama bin Laden, or actually these disciples of Osama bin Laden, to set up an embassy so that they could have outside world contact and be part of kind of the international community. And you know where that embassy was set up? Oh, you'll never guess. Doha, Qatar. Ha. Another one of them coincidences. Another one of them coincidences. By the way, it was during this time that they were setting up the embassy that Obama did that infamous, you know, Rose Garden complete charade of trading that traitorous deserter, Bo Bergdahl, for 5 high-ranking Taliban commanders. I mean, and a whole bunch of money, which the Taliban, of course, promptly used to buy guns and ammo and IEDs to kill Americans, financed by the American, well, why don't we say by the President of America? I don't think calling him the American President would be quite right. And then we have Nigeria. The Obama administration, folks, allowed the army of Boko Haram, the big terrorist, nasty terrorist outfit in Africa, just like they did with ISIS, it allowed them to rise in power. Number one, they were getting their arms supplied by America through Libya. Number two, Barack Obama, just like saying, oh, Benghazi was caused by the video, and by the way, you can keep your doctor, Obama is downplaying Boko Haram the whole time that they're evolving into kind of a deadly fighting force and a big fighting force. Boko Haram was really founded, in fact, originally financed by $3 million from Osama bin Laden, just so that you know. And Obama knew this. There's a guy by the name of Andrew McCarthy, and he was talking about the Clintons' State Department. In other words, the State Department at the time, Hillary Clinton was quote-unquote running it into the ground, I might add. Quote, instead, ignoring what Boko Haram pronounces its goals to be, the Obama administration portrayed it as a diffuse organization with no clear agenda that was ascendant due to the policies of the Nigerian government, which is under Christian leadership. Yeah. By the way, John Kerry did kind of the same thing when he took over from Hillary Clinton, but I've talked about John Kerry. We don't need to waste breath on him. As of today, folks, Boko Haram has a quote-unquote massive army that, quote, is reportedly stronger than the Nigerian army. Nigeria has had to pull in the neighboring country of Cameroon to try and take out Boko Haram. Cameroon is an ally of Israel. Ha! Huh, didn't know about that link, did you? So, in fact, Israel is fighting alongside others, shall we say, with the supplying of arms and other things to Cameroon, which is assisting Nigeria in its battle against Boko Haram, which shouldn't exist at all and shouldn't be anywhere near the size it was except for the conscious lack of acts and the distorted truth. Truth being an oxymoron, that spewed from Barack Obama in his last 4 years in office. And of course, listen, we're very familiar with Barack Obama's enmity toward Israel, the fact that he suggested going back to the 1967 borders, which is suicide, his assistance to Iran, his treatment of Netanyahu. I can go on and on and on. It's just black and white. His taking taxpayer money and illegally trying to influence an Israeli election to get rid of Netanyahu. I mean, you know, we're well aware of this. So there was a commission called the Citizens Commission on Benghazi. I told you, you know, when Benghazi happened back in 2012, I told you this was never going to go away. Everybody laughed. You'll be forgotten. I told you Benghazi was never going to go away. There is no way that Americans were going to forget leaving our boys on that roof with no help. It was not going to go away. And you know what? It has not gone away. In fact, Benghazi is really, it's really the catalyst for all the boomerang nonsense that's going to happen, that is beginning to happen right now in holding people accountable. And I think that will include, before it's done, Hillary Clinton. We shall see. The conclusion that this committee reached was that Obama, I quote now, quote, switched sides in the war on terror, unquote. Let me repeat that. Obama, quote, switched sides in the war on terror, unquote. And they go on to say, this is a great quote. I want to find it for you. And I'm going to end the show with this quote. It is, and read, your host is thumbing through papers at an alarming rate like a Superman. Here we go. In time, the enormity of this crime will be examined through a historical lens. A few decades from now, people will wonder how the liberty-loving United States elected a hollow, morally insipid man named Barack Hussein Obama, who armed and trained a jihadi army that destroyed our common human heritage and murdered entire tribes by the thousands. Next week, folks, we will be examining Barack Obama's Muslim Brotherhood in the American government and the continuation even as of today, of that civilizational jihad. In the meantime, you have a safe week. Put on your battle helmet. Fasten your seatbelt. Strap on your Kevlar. Lock and load, because this week's going to be crazy too. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.